It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod, recorded January 26th, 2024. And in the pod with me this time is Napa County Supervisor Belia Ramos. Hello.
Hi, Barry.
Thanks for being in the pod. We're engaged in our process of making sure every candidate for local office gets a chance to talk on the Barry Pod, and this is your chance.
Excellent. I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much, and a little different tone from our previous conversations, but always welcome it.
Yeah. You are running for a third term on the Napa County Board of Supervisors in District 5. What have you learned in those first two terms?
I think putting it in context, I think can really help understand how I answer this. Barry, on my first day on the job in 2017, we closed the floodgates and we had $40 million of road repair. 3 months later, I became chair of the Board of Supervisors. 5 months later, our CEO departed, and exactly 9 months on the job, the 2017 fires broke out. So the first term, I remember I showed up to work in January of 2018. I'd been on the job for a year, and I was like, how do I set up my voicemail? We didn't even have a chance to set up our voicemail. We had no orientation. We had mudslides and we had road closures and there was no orientation. So it was actually great to be able to give some feedback to staff on how they should orient our new two supervisors that joined us last year, because I would have loved to know a few of these things at the front end of taking on this job. You know, the first year we had to really pivot our way of thinking, and it really started our foundation for becoming a more resilient community. And here comes 2020, right? 2020 was the last year of my first term, and another fire and a pandemic. And really being able to take all of that in and to digest what did we do well, where do we need to improve, and how we can take our own future into our hands. And that's really what the second term has been about. You know, we had to pivot. We didn't have the right leadership in place, and so we transitioned from our past CEO to our current CEO. We knew that taking our own fuel reduction and mitigation work into our own hands was going to be what we needed, because we cannot be in that scenario where people can't get out during an emergency, right? And we had that in 2017. We had people stuck at the top of Soda Canyon Road. I mean, that just simply cannot happen in our community anymore. And so we really dedicated ourselves to be the first in the nation to approve a community wildfire protection plan, a CWPP, where we really chart out and we say, these are the areas that we need to reduce the fuels, and these are the areas that we need to prioritize fuel reduction for emergency access and ingress and egress. And so we did that, and we've invested $14 million over 3 years. But that's not enough. Why? Because it's growing back, and there's still more work to do in the plan. So we said, you know what? We need to go after resiliency money. And so we applied and received a $50 million BRIC grant from FEMA. And that's a resiliency grant for investments into hardening our infrastructure and really that fuels reduction and working with property owners. So it gives us greater capacity to do more work. But you know what? That wasn't enough. And last year, I was sitting with the Vintners when you were chair of the Board of Supervisors, as I was last year. You were on this little speaking circuit. It's a very informal circuit, but you know you get called in every couple of months. And one of them is to work with the Napa Valley Vintners Industry Issues Committee. And they were asking me questions about our CAL FIRE contract and how we work with our volunteers and how we're going to coordinate our fuels mitigation and how much do we spend on this category of fire and on that category of fire. And I said honestly to them, I have no idea, because everything in fire was kind of piecemeal. We would do fire suppressions over here with the CAL FIRE contract. We did our training and development with our volunteers over here. We had the CWPP working with the FireWise Foundation over here, and none of them were integrated. And there was not one person I can go to and say, hey, what's our total here? And so sitting in that meeting, they said, well, what are you going to do about that? And I was like, I think, in my out loud way of thinking, I said, I think we need a fire services administrator. And they're like, well, get to work. So I then went to staff and I was like, hey, so I let something out of my mouth in a room, and I think we can work with this. And so that was in January of last year. And we pushed hard. And by April, we had a proposal ready to include in the budget for exactly that, a fire services administrator, someone that could look at fire marshaling and that side of public safety, that someone could look at our mitigation work, someone that can help us keep track of the budget dollars and what we're spending in, whether it's our apparatus and our fire suppression, and bring it all together, right? That's what we needed to do. Why? Because that is what worries people the most here, right? There are inconveniences about life. You know, I don't like my roads. You know, the cost of living is hard. But when people are worried, you hear about it. And that's exactly what you hear right now. You hear about people's worry about fire, wildfire coming to our doorstep. And so pushing forward, we included it in the budget. And I am so happy to say that my out loud thinking got us to a much better place. We hired our former battalion chief that was our CAL FIRE battalion chief here assigned in Napa County, Dave Hsu. And we also hired a program manager to help us really with that implementation of that BRIC grant. Because, you know, $50 million, that's fantastic, right? But in government, when you are told you have to spend this $50 million in 3 years, that's actually not easy. And so really prioritizing that. And also using this opportunity, we only renewed the CAL FIRE contract for 2 years. Using this opportunity to say, okay, where do we want to go? So we did a standards of coverage assessment of our fire services, looking at our apparatus, what needs to change. We got some great input from the grand jury. And really all of this is geared towards, we need to make improvements and take our resiliency into our own hands. And we did that fire. We did it with COVID. When COVID came our way, you know, this board, we had so many meetings really focusing in on making sure that we were doing right by our public safety and our public health, but also by our own survivability, right? We know we're a very tourism heavy community, right? People come here to look at something you can't see anywhere else, right? Our beautiful vineyards and our wine growing region. And so that required us to get a little creative. And so we did that. And so when I think about, you know, what was the second term about? The second term was about resiliency and taking control of our future and to really improve our leadership at the county. We welcomed my two new colleagues, Supervisor Gallagher and Supervisor Cottrell, and it's just been a great opportunity. As much change as we have had, we have accomplished so much in this last year, and remarkable things that when you think about what does Napa County do, we do a lot of things first. And I think some people don't recognize that. You know, we were the first in the state to issue defensible space certifications so that property owners, when they've done their fuel mitigation work, they could go to the insurance company and they could say, look what I did. And, you know, the fire marshal says, I'm good here, right? That's one thing we did. Another thing we did, we created the first in the nation, a forgivable accessory dwelling unit loan program so that we can create more units within our existing footprint. That's really what it's about. It's not creating a greater impact, but it's being able to generate an alternative form of housing. And these units are great for people that, you know, want to age in place, that need an au pair, that want to just have someone on the property, maybe a college student that can keep eyes on the property. And by working with the county's loan program and restricting that deed and who is able to live in that unit, we all win, right? The county's made investment in through our ARPA dollars into this, and then we also create additional housing units at the same time. So when I think about, you know, what we accomplished in the second term, it's exciting, and I'm really excited for the third term.
So to delve into a few specifics on various things, talking about the CEO situation,
yeah.
was the transition dismissal of Min Tran mishandled?
No, and that's a great question, and I'll say in that it was a longer process that perhaps, you know, the community didn't agree with or questioned. But when you undertake these executive level decisions, they have to be thoughtful. It has to be well prepared. It can't be done in haste. And we took the necessary time to do that. And as you know, information came out after the fact, which people can access, that really solidified that our, as far as the board's process, you know, we did what we felt was right by this county.
Mm-hmm. There were concerns about his functionality as CEO before the revelation that he was looking for another job. Yes?
Well, I can't go into that one, Barry. I mean, I appreciate the question, but from a litigation standpoint, I can't go into those specifics other than to say I know that, you know, we were thoughtful in our process and we didn't rush it, and we did what I feel is right by this county and that we can defend.
Fair enough. I had to ask. Let's talk about housing for a second. Now, anybody who's followed the housing allocations topic over decades has seen it fluctuate dramatically, bigger demands, smaller demands. The county has been able to accommodate their needs mostly by working with the cities and putting new housing inside urban areas, which has been sort of the master plan for the whole county, right? Forever.
Yes.
There will come a time, it's not today, it's probably not 5 years, but there will come a time when there's no place left inside those rural urban limits. And then you're talking about encroaching into agricultural land. How does that get dealt with? Because, like I say, it might be a 10 years from now decision, but the people like you who are on the board now are kind of setting up what will happen then. What do we do when we get to that point?
Well, that's a great question, because that's touches upon two things that I do. As a supervisor, making sure that I am defending our agricultural preserve that was the will of the people here in Napa County. That's my job, to protect the agricultural preserve and those urban limit lines. But in my other capacity as president of Association of Area Governments, I'm the one doling out those regional housing needs allocations and creating that methodology. And I'll tell you, one of the things that was astonishing to me in going through this last RENA cycle, yes, the numbers were huge, because HCD at the state said, enough, the Bay Area is short on housing, you've been short for years, and you got to make amends, basically, is what they said to us. So very large numbers. But looking at the methodology that HCD at the state level uses to create those numbers, that's where we have opportunities of advocacy. So they look at what are called high resource areas to determine where housing should go. And they're using a report that was done by UC Berkeley a number of years ago. And guess what's a high resource area? Coombsville. There is not a sidewalk. There's only a couple of lights, like street lights. There is no access to services, but that is a, and then you look at the topography. That was my biggest challenge here. The topography alone in Coombsville, it's water shortages that it has that are pervasive and that are part of the geology in Coombsville. That high resource designation that came from UC Berkeley to inform the allocation process, no one drove out to Coombsville to see that that is not the place where you are going to be able to put a higher density housing. We even struggle based upon our MST, the Millikan-Sarko-Tulikay Basin, and our restrictions of water and the MST. You can have one unit on a parcel right now because those water shortages, they're just not going away because of how that geology works in Coombsville. So when we look at that, our opportunity, I brought this back to the board and I said, this needs to be part of our legislative platform. We need to be advocating for those high resource designation areas to take into account the geological, the topographical, but also the natural resource limitations, right? And this was a challenge that many jurisdictions had. We had 28 appeals to the RENA housing allocations at ABAG, and serving on the administrative committee, I heard all of those. And I'll tell you, we are not dissimilar from other communities. Other communities were saying, we can't build this, we don't have the water. We can't build this, we have fires. We can't build this, we don't have the roadways to support it. But we're at this position where the state is saying, do more, and in the typical fashion, right, with less. Do more with less. That's the position that we're in. So really taking what we know, and this is where those relationships in Sacramento are important, and having that experience as a supervisor that I can walk into those assembly members and senators, they know who I am, and being able to say, hey, I've got this problem and I need to talk to you at this ground level of how we are looking at our methodology. The numbers are gonna keep on increasing, right? We're behind, not just Napa County, San Mateo, Santa Clara, everybody's behind on creating housing. When you look at the fact, we just received a report from Dr. Eiler from Sonoma State on just our economic situation here. We're a jobs importer. We import thousands of jobs a day. And that's because the housing isn't here. So they're not disconnected. They're most definitely connected. But we've got to be able to take a hard look at what do we have and what is our capacity, our building capacity. And certainly continuing to inform legislators and to inform the regulatory decision makers at HCD that our agricultural preserve has its limitations.
Land use is number one in this county, more so than most counties, I would say, even in a place like the Bay Area, where land use is always top priority. And the kind of land use that I'm thinking about now is vineyard development land use. Yeah. And for a long period of time, there has not been an intention or desire to limit that growth because the wine industry was booming for decades and Napa's reputation rose and rose and rose. And why would we not want more vineyards? It's what the economy is based on. It's what people come here for and spend money. And yet now there's been sort of a moment where people are looking around and saying, are we reaching capacity? And that might be when you're in the traffic on Silverado Trail at 3:30 in the afternoon, or it might be some other issue involving proposal to add another commercial use in an area that's hard to get to and may have some of those fire danger factors. So we get into all these new discoveries, new awarenesses, I think. That's a way of leading up to the questions about in specifics, the La Colleen decision, you voted against that, right? And that was that's a moment that will be remembered for people who track Napa County history. What were your reasons, first of all, and what does that say about future proposals?
That's a great question, and certainly something that's at the top of people in the industry and of their mind right now. Now, I think one of the things that is important when you look at land use, it is, I would say, 80% of what we hear about and maybe 15% of our work. And so that is the subject that people become passionate about, and passionate on all sides. And our job as supervisors, when you're dealing with discretionary permits, which this application was a discretionary permit, we have to be able to balance the what is being proposed as to what its impacts are. And impacts, and I mean impacts in the holistic word of impacts, not just looking at roadways and not just looking at your hillsides and your view shed. It's holistically looking at the impacts. And every time I look at a project, I look at it from the perspective of, is this a project that I find sustainable for the future, and sustainable in the terms of ecological resources, but also in its economic sustainability? And also, is it a defensible project? Can you say, yep, I'm in a position where the yes is not going to have holes poked through it? And that's where this project was different. And this project, when you looked at the parcel itself, the slope, and its situs, that's the most important part here. When you have three members of the city council in Napa whose reservoir, its headwaters, are right at the foot of this project, and they're saying, we're worried about our water, we have to listen. When we look at our conservation regulations, and our conservation regulations say, you need to consider natural resources and water resources, public drinking water. When you look at where this was located as compared to the impacts and concerns that were being raised, It isn't simply about, can that be mitigated? It has to be, is this a yes? And can I, with absolute certainty, say that this is not going to have a negative impact? It didn't feel like this project could get there with what was in front of us. And I stated that clearly on the record as to why and which conservation regulations I was really using as my guiding light. Now, that's the, I would say, the process and the legality, right? Sitting in judgment of an application. Then there's the politics, right? And let's just be real. There's always politics. Do I think that there could have been an alternative project here? Yes. Would I have been willing to send it back to the Planning Commission? Yes. That one to the Zoning Administrator, not the Planning Commission. Would I have been willing to send it back and to have another set of eyes look at it, a project alternative? Absolutely. But there weren't the votes. And you can look back and you could see I was chair at the time. I took a recess because I was trying to figure out, can I find another way to send this back? Why? Because I recognize that's a lot of time. That's a lot of money by the applicant. And there could have been a better process here, a better alternative in at the end. But I had two supervisors that were a definitive no. I had two supervisors that were a definitive yes. And so I found myself sitting right back in the place where Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy was my professor in law school. Took a class with him in Salzburg. And at the last day of class, he allowed us to ask questions, and we could only ask five. And one of the questions that was asked is, how does it feel to sit in the swing seat? And he said, it is the most powerful and burdensome seat to sit in. And those words have stuck with me for life, because when you look at the makeup of the board, I've sat in a number of swing vote. I've been in that chair that I am that swing vote. And so it is incumbent upon me, because I did find myself as a decision maker, the ultimate decision maker there to break a tie, to explain my thought process and explain why. And I took that break. I tried to find an alternative. It wasn't there. And I wasn't going to change my vote to the yes, because that project just, it did not satisfy the concerns that I had, the concerns that were voiced to our community, and I didn't feel that it upheld the intent of our conservation regulations.
So what begs the question, I guess, is what you hinted at or spoke to briefly, that there was something in the process that wasn't quite right, and that leads to ask, how did it get so far if it wasn't a buildable project, right? It went through all this for 9 years, right?
And that's the tough part here, Barry. Our process, it is too long. But we have, and there's a difference of opinion depending on who you talk to and what camp they sit in, right? Some people say, well, it met the requirements. But those aren't requirements. It's a discretionary permit. So those are minimums. Now, the question is, do the minimums satisfy the concerns that are being raised in our community? And this is why, when we had a chance to speak at the forum on Monday night, I said, we need to update our general plan, because this general plan from 2008 did not anticipate these droughts, these close in cycle droughts. This general plan did not anticipate two mega fires that devastated over 30 years of housing stock in the unincorporated county. This general plan did not anticipate that we would have these large housing numbers coming to our community. We have pressures that didn't exist in 2008. We've had changes to our roads and street standards and how we need to evaluate access, ingress, and egress. All of this, that 2008 document, it wasn't even a blink in its eye. And so the time, while it's not an outdated document by any means, the time to update is now, so that that document can encompass this exact conversation that we're having. You know, we can't continue to paint this county over with broad brushstrokes and say that the floor is the same as the hillsides, right? There are different considerations in that. Just the roadways alone, right? If you're on the valley floor, you're on an arterial roadways, that's a different standard than if you are up in the hillsides and you are connected to a public road through a longer private road. And so really looking at that and to say, we need to have a better guide from our general plan that encompasses our current situation, but also we need to have a better planning process. It simply cannot take as long as it takes. And that's a challenge that we have had for many reasons. A lot of it has been, you know, we've also had to improve the culture of when it comes to planning and also compliance at the county, right? This county, before I got here, people did not have a great level of confidence in permits being complied with. And we have been improving upon that continuously. We created the amnesty program for people to come in and be able to say, you know what, mea culpa, I'm not in check right now, but can we get there? We also had a use permit determination process where if maybe people didn't understand their use permit because they were there were addendums to it over the years. Bring it all in, and we helped you simplify it, and we sat there and we figured it out. So we've been making these improvements, and I'm really excited with our with the changes we've made in planning, building, and environmental services that we're going to be making those improvements. It needs to be better. It can't be dragged out because time is money, and I get that. And there needs to be certainty in the process, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the judgment and needs to be independent and what the board does, but there should be certainty in the process. That said, you know, there have been two no's at the Board of Supervisors during my time. And, you know, there are similarities between those two projects. But when you look at it, it was just not something that the board could say, the majority of the board could say yes to. And it's not a pervasive problem. It's not a signal of agriculture's not welcome. I'm the daughter of a farm worker. I'm here because of these vineyards. I spend the time on the weekends with my dad in his vineyards. I'm the president of Napa County 4-H. This is what we do here, right? We're an agricultural community, and we have to embrace it. And that requires us right now at the board to have the political courage to look towards the sustainability of our agriculture. And that is in the whole sense of the word, not just from an environmental and ecological standpoint, but from an economical standpoint. This is who we are. It's our past, it's our present, and it's gonna be our future. But we've gotta make sure we're smart about how we embrace what we have and make sure that its survivability exceeds definitely my service here at the Board of Supervisors.
We've used all the time we have. I could probably talk to you for 10 hours about all these things because I enjoy it, and your responses are so full of information. Thank you for that. Belly Ramos, candidate for a third term on the Napa County Board of Supervisors representing District 5. Thank you for being in the Berry Pod.
Thank you, Barry. I appreciate the time.
This episode recorded on January 26th, 2024.
You're listening to The Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.